mentioning again, we're continuing with the study of the Haggadah. We started yesterday by mentioning the uniqueness of the Kiddush. That the Kiddush on this night, and I would say everything we do on this night, has to be connected to the theme of the Geula. So even the Kiddush on this night is one of the Dalet Kosos. And it is a fulfillment. It's not just the mitzvah of Kedushas Hayom, which you make on every holiday. It's that, but it also partakes of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, because by declaring that the day is holy, and the reason for the holiness of the day is because on that day we were taken out of Egypt, that itself is already a form of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And it's not just a form of telling a story in the abstract, but it's doing an action which exhibits the consequences. The consequences of the event are that we signal one night every year, it's a chag, it's the first night of Pesach. It's a night which is sanctified, and that's the essence of the sanctification. So that itself is already a form of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. We mentioned another point which bears repeating, that the theme of the night, everything we do on this night, really demands understanding. More so, I would say, than most of the holidays or most of the mitzvahs, where we make a differentiation between the doing of the mitzvah and between the understanding. Of course, when a person does a mitzvah, he should understand what he's doing and get the benefit, but that's not always the case. There's many mitzvahs that people do. They may just have a vague notion, or they may not even really know what the reason is anyways, and they do the mitzvah. The relationship between the performance of the mitzvahs and understanding is much more blatant. If a person doesn't understand what he's doing, he's really not partaking of the holiness of the night at all. And that's why the whole essence is sipur, to tell a story. So what kind of story is it if you're just mouthing words and you know what you're saying? They can't call that sipur. And all the mitzvahs that we do on this night enhance the character of the sipur experience. It's to enhance it, that is, to give it reality, to give it significance. We're not just talking about something in the abstract, we're actually eating a matzah. And the fact that a person eats a certain food purely because of it signifies these ideas makes an impact upon the soul. So, that's why I mentioned that we start off with actually studying, the Haggadah starts off with reviewing the mitzvahs of the evening, and since it has to do with teaching your children, it goes through different, it's sort of a manual. Which we don't have that before we go into the sukkah. We don't start studying the laws of the sukkah. That you study in advance to build the sukkah. Most people don't build the sukkah. Someone else builds it. Whatever. You hire someone who puts up the sukkah, and then you go into the sukkah. Here, you're studying what you're going to be doing. That's part of the haggadah. And then you actually go and do it. So the idea of being mentally involved is the major theme. That's all those stories about the great rabbis and Bnei Brak, Chalamar Belasapir. The whole idea. And indeed, as we pointed out, that this is truly the evening on which a person is supposed to learn all night long, so to speak. But it's brought down that even after you finish the Haggadah, so you're supposed to engage in, whether it's Sipur, whether it's studying about the laws of Pesach or whatever, until Ashiyachat Fenoshina, until he's overcome by sleep, which is an interesting shiur. That is to say that you're completely engrossed. As a result of the Seder, you should be completely engrossed in the ideas, and you should continue. That's a very important theme in Judaism, that there's no real end. There's no formal ending of the Seder. But it's rather intended to stimulate. That once certain thoughts are evoked and a person is involved, so he naturally continues. It's a different idea of learning that we have. Most people don't have this idea. Most people have the idea that whatever thinking you're doing is generally to solve a problem. And once the problem is solved, that's it. Now you enjoy whatever it was that you thought you were going to get. Okay, once you put together the game, the machine, etc., so that's it. Thank God you put it together. Now you use it. You use the computer, whatever it is. Here, it's to evoke certain, it's an investigation. And it's vast, it's endless, of course. That's the idea that they stayed up all night. there's no real obligation as such. You fulfilled your obligation. But if you do it properly, so a person can't really stop thinking about it, it raises all kinds of issues, questions. A really good Seder would have a lot of that, a lot of spontaneousness, and the next day you're still discussing, you may have thought, I thought of something about that, we left off with a question, and let's continue. There's that element of continuity. That's how you know that you had a good Seder. If everybody's over and people have nothing to say, then they just start talking about ordinary stuff, and then, oh, you just go to sleep. Okay, it's not the greatest Seder. But after Kiddush, the next thing you have is Rechatz. And Rechatz, of course, is connected to Karpas. So the idea is that you wash your hands for the Tibul B'mashka. That's all year long. Well, some do, some don't. Whether a vegetable that's dipped in liquid has to you wash for. So it's machlokas whether we have to do it all year. On Pesach we do it, and we do it without a bracha. The basic idea, the reason for the karpas, is to create a shinoi, which means to do something unusual and different. What does that teach you? In order to stimulate questions. But beyond that, this is a formalized change, and it's not all, you know, once a kid has seen it, and he knows it's part of the order of the Seder, so he's not going to ask. The purpose of the karpas, the rechitza and the karpas, is very, very expressive of the purpose of the night. And that is to fulfill the mitzvah. It's part of the mitzvah of what? V'higadta levincha. It's part of the mitzvah of v'higadta levincha, which is a fundamental aspect of the mitzvah of Sipur. It's a subheading of the mitzvah of Sipur. And that is the Sipur that we engage in. How would you formulate that? Well, what does that mean? I mean, is the mitzvah to educate children, or is the mitzvah to engage in Sipur? What we seem to be saying is that the mitzvah of Sipur, but a subheading of that is the fact that he got to Levincha. How does that fit in then? And what kind of a thing is this? What's the idea? Of course, the question arises, what's the shinui over here? Or, for example, for those people who, let's say they wash all year long for vegetables. So what's the shinui? To answer this question, there's different components in the karpas. Karpas consists of the washing, the eating of the vegetable, and then there's one more component. What's the other component? Siluk, removing the table. You're supposed to remove the table. Now, they used to have separate tables. They used to eat on, I guess, what we would call tray tables. Each person would have his own table in front of him with the food on it. So the third part of karpas is the removal of the table, or we would say the removal of the food. Today, what we do is we all sit at one table. So you're supposed to remove the Seder plate with all the food on it. That's the shinui. That's what generates the manishtana. That is to say that the basic shinui is that normally all year we may have a dip before the meal. That's not so unusual. You may have a dip before the meal. So what's so unusual? But we don't have the dip, and then we remove everything. So the question is, well, why are we doing this? That's the attention. That's what grabs his attention. Well, why are we doing this? We should proceed and continue eating. We're not doing it, so tonight must be different. Why is this night different? That's the idea. Getting back to the question about the Sipur, that the Sipur incorporates the idea of the Higadta Levincha, which means that it's not just a matter of reviewing certain ideas. It's not just a study of a subject. But the Sipur must be done in the framework of transmission. That is the kiyum. The kiyum of the Sipur is that the Masorah should be transmitted. That's the kiyum. Because this story constitutes the foundation, and it leads to certain consequences. That the person accepts the system of Torah that emerges from this. So that's the mitzvah of Sipur. Now it's true it's true that even if he was completely alone, he engages in it. Because in terms of himself, he's reestablishing it in terms of himself. But the ideal is that that he has somebody else, preferably his child, or as we've learned, that the Rambam says, even if you don't have your own child, anybody, the child over here is not strictly speaking limited just to your own child. That would be the highest level, because that's the design of the system. The design of the system is that the Torah should be perpetuated from parent to child, father to son. But anyone else, for example, like Akirov, this would be a Akirov situation. Anyone that you have over, who's like a child in that sense, who's not really committed to the system, and you would be masaper to him for the same objective, to transmit to him the fundamental ideas of Yadus. So that's part of the mitzvah. That's the kiyum of the sefer. That is the maisa mitzvah sefer, and the kiyum is that as a result of this, the system is affirmed, the affirmation of the system for yourself. But the highest level is when there's the second would be children, and the third would be other Jews, even if they're not your children. That's why you have to utilize imagination, to use all of the devices of communicating it to people, of getting them involved. This is creativity, the idea of the karpas. So you should do your own shinui. You should know who's there and what you could do to get their attention and get them involved. Again, if a person is alone, he can do the Seder by himself, but that's clearly not the preference. It's something which, by its very nature, should be done with others, because the whole idea is give and take, question and answer, question and answer. That's a very important idea. That's we had that shiur recently. That another idea, it's a very important idea. You see something from this, that many aspects of the Torah's idea of education are expressed over here. And we saw by the Kruvim that they're facing each other, and the Baal HaTurim says, in the form of two students, two Talmidei Chacham, even though it's the face of a child, we explain that. Two Talmidei Chacham that are up, giving up and going up and back and learning. Chavrusas, like Chavrusas. No Sivinote. Going up and back and study. So we said that that's the essence of Talmud Torah. The essence of Talmud Torah is not where a person is off by himself, but where he's engaging in a certain kind of process, give and take, with in the classical chavrusa situation. So you see the same thing in Sipur, that Sipur has to be done in the form of give and take. And if a person has nobody else, he's all alone, okay, that I guess would be something of a tragedy on Pesach. You could still do the mitzvahs. But you're not. If you have choice, it would be wrong. In a different way, for example, Shabbos, if you want to be alone, you can be alone. So next Shabbos. Most people like to have some kind of social situation on Shabbos or the Yom Tov. But if you just want to be alone, you have enough with people all week long, you want to have your Shabbos meal, and you want to have a sefer and learn, and you... That's fine. It does not, because there it's Onek Shabbos. But when it comes to Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's lacking. You're not doing it properly, because that's not the ideal of learning. The ideal of learning is to be Nosei V'Nosei. The next thing is called a Magid. That's Haggadah. That's going through the Haggadah. At this point, before we proceed with Magid, the minog is to break the matzah. We have three matzos. So we take one and break it in half. And then one half you put back in with the others that are covered. And then you put aside the other one for the afikomen, which is the matzah that's eaten later on. The idea, of course, what's the idea? What's the reason for the breaking of the matzah at this point? The recitation of the story is done in conjunction with certain objects, the entities of the mitzvah. So there, you see there too that it's not just the telling of a story, but it's done in a special way. And one of the ways is, so to speak, I guess today they call show and tell, to demonstrate. Which means that it has to have a very specific meaning, a reality to the person. The reality that this is real, and because of this event, we have a system of mitzvahs, and this is one of the mitzvahs. It has to be done in a manner which establishes the reality of the phenomenon for all present. It's got to affect you on an emotional level. When a person is recounting events, or you're telling about something that happened, or a crime, if you have some props, either it's the actual gun. You don't have to. You can tell me the story. You took out a handgun. You could describe it basically. You don't have to show it to me. But it's all, or the knife. And then you actually bring out the actual knife that hits people in a certain way. The idea in court, when they're recounting a crime, the prosecutor, to make it more real, he wants to have the props. If he can talk to us about the knife, he plunged the knife. If he actually has the knife and he shows the knife, that really makes an impact upon the jurors. Even if he doesn't have the actual knife, if he has a facsimile, that also makes an impact. But the actual one makes a greater impression. So here too, it's being told in the framework that this is real. The reality, the fact is that the matzah has a significance and it traces itself all the way back. So it's got to be told in that fashion, that we're not just in the abstract, but this is reality. It's our story. The next paragraph is challenging. Now, as I mentioned yesterday, there are those who have the Rambam, for example, in his Haggadah, has the words "Bivehilu yatzanu mivitzrayim holach manya." With great haste did we leave Egypt. This is the bread of affliction. And one of the major questions that people ask is, why is this in Aramaic? The rest of the Haggadah is in Hebrew, and this is in Aramaic. So what's the reason for that? The other questions. All right. So the first statement I understand, because we're commencing the story, and it has to be done in the presence of the matzah. And as we said tonight, everything has to have a meaning. You can't just have matzah and I don't know what matzah is. You can't just do that. So what's matzah? Oh, this is the bread of affliction that our fathers ate. Oh, so you're giving it a signification. Without that signification, that mental understanding, it's not matzah, so to speak. After that, however, it becomes a little bit difficult, because then, what does this have to do with anything? That whoever is hungry, let him come and eat. Whoever is in need, let him come and join us for the Pesach, the Yifsach. So you're inviting people to eat, if you're hungry, and you're inviting people to join you in the Pesach, the Karban Pesach. And then it goes further and says that now we are here. Next year, we'll be in the land of Israel. So apparently we're not in Israel. This is in Chutz La'aretz. This is taking place in Chutz La'aretz. But if that's the case, how are they bringing the Karban Pesach if it's in Chutz La'aretz? The Karban Pesach can only be brought in the land of Israel, and only when the Beis HaMikdash is in existence. So what does that mean? You're telling him to join you for the Karban Pesach, and then you're also stating that now we are here. We're in exile. So how does that work? That seems to be a contradiction. And then we say, Ashata Avde, now we are slaves. L'shan Abba b'nei Chorin. Next year may we be free. Which, what does that mean? In what sense are we slaves? And what does that mean? How are we slaves? Why are we slaves? The whole theme of the evening is Geula, and not only Geula, but an eternal Geula. The idea of that now we are slaves is strange, because one of the main themes of the night is that God redeemed us, and the essential redemption is a spiritual redemption, so to speak, and we're redeemed in a permanent way. We'll never be enslaved again. It says, Hamakabi of Raso Kol Bechor Mitzrayim, who smote in his anger all the firstborn of Egypt, Vayotze Es Amo Yisrael Mitocham, and brought forth his nation Israel from amongst them, L'cheiras Olam, to eternal freedom. That's the bracha Emes Vemuna, which we say after Kriya Shema every night. We're going to be saying it the night of Pesach, L'cheiras Olam, and then we're going to go, and the first thing we're going to say is Hashata Avdi. It seems to be a bit of a contradiction. There are those, with regard to Kol Betzrich, Yesei V'Yifsach, I mentioned that it seems to be referring to the Karban Pesach. There are those who who take it that way. If you take it that way, then you're going to have a problem that is a contradiction. Because this is in Chutz La'aretz, and even if it's in Eretz Israel today, it's, as far as this is concerned, we don't have the Migdash, so we don't have the Karban Pesach. However, let me read to you from one commentary who says, Kol Ditzrich, Kol Mishetzarach Karpas, V'charoses, Umoro, V'yayin, Aldal Kosos. That's a very, very ingenious kind of an explanation. It's not a reference to the Karban Pesach. It's a reference to the necessities of Pesach. Whoever requires necessities of Pesach, Yesei V'yivsach, Yavo, let him come, V'yikach Tzarcheh Pesach Mimeni, and let him come. In other words, you're offering to supply people with the needs of Pesach. Shekein Roy Lasos, Lemi Shayecholos Biyadav. Because well, that's also very important. And it's an idea. Not everybody who you're saying it to. It's just expressing an idea. But the idea is that whoever has, that's what that. I'm expressing the idea that's correct. That those who can afford it should be able to should supply other people with their. Now, Vahai V'yifsach. The word V'yifsach Lav Pesach Mamish. It's not a reference to the Pesach Mamish. To be Bavel lo haya Pesach. Because in Bavel there was no Pesach. This is a reference to the Balei HaTosfos, that that's their pshat. It's also interesting to note that the last phrase, L'shana Abba B'nei Choron, is in Hebrew. So that's another question. And the paragraph is being stated in Aramaic, so why would the last sentence switch, revert back to Hebrew? I'm just going to suggest a possible answer. It is possible. Or maybe, if it's not the answer, maybe it contains this connotation, whatever, on some level, is everything that we do at the Seder, again, is that we're not dealing with abstract concepts per se. We're communicating in a way to drive home the point. So it's the form of communication is very significant. So one of the aspects of Golos is language. That's clear, that we're not supposed to be speaking, nothing wrong with foreign languages, but we're supposed to be speaking Hebrew. That's our language. That would be the ideal. But we can't do that because we're not in Israel, and we're in. So that's one of the things that we lost. As soon as we were exiled, we lost the language. People did. Well, for about 1,000 years or so, the main language was Yiddish. So that Aramaic, really reflects the first exile. So apparently we see that there is an element, there is a difference between the Seder as it is done in Eretz Yisrael as opposed to the Seder as it is done in Chutz La'aretz, in exile. This is, well, essentially what we're doing is a Seder, I mean, all the fundamentals are going to be the same, but there is some kind of a concept over here. There is a perspective. There's a difference between doing the Seder from the perspective of a free person, otherwise you wouldn't say this, as opposed to doing the Seder from the perspective of someone who's in Golos. We're in Golos. So to bring that home, you use the language of Golos. So this is expresses. This is the the paradigm, so to speak, for Golos, because that's it, Aramaic. However, to me it's not far-fetched, it's not absurd to say that even in Golos there is the recognition that the Golos will be terminated. That's part of our Amunah. That it's not just a hope, it's an Amunah, it's a conviction. And that we will be restored to Eretz Yisrael. And that's Yom Mashiach. That's the theme of Mashiach. And that's Machakalo, that's a very, comes in at this point, interestingly enough. We're already talking about Mashiach. We're talking about Mashiach here. L'shana Haba. Then, to emphasize the certainty of that idea, we switch to Hebrew. That is, we have to contain the idea that we will be returned. And that's a very fundamental, that's a very significant idea, that we will be speaking the language. It's something that we don't think about that much, because we're very, very comfortable in Golos. We are exceedingly comfortable, and we're very, very comfortable with English. Most Jews in America speak English. Some, if you spent a lot of time in Israel, so maybe your Hebrew is pretty good already. But I think most people feel much more comfortable in English. We don't have a real sense of the loss of that aspect, that we're not speaking the language. The fact that we're not speaking the language is a problem. We have to think about why it's such a problem, because we're very comfortable. Well, we study Torah, everything. Now you have the new Art Scroll series, everything is translated into English, and we think it's fine, but it's not fine. and we communicate in not in Lashon HaKodesh. That is that's a serious aspect of the Golos. So speaking in Halach Ma'anya is actually partaking. It's partaking of the Golos phenomenon in a very significant way. It's not a trivial thing. The language aspect is not trivial, it's significant.